It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here each and every day on LRN.FM from BEA, beautiful Phoenix, Arizona, where it's kind of chilly. It's a little bit chilly today, but I tell you what, I bet you it's not as chilly as where you're probably at, man. Well, you know, here in the studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com, we have a special guest I'm very proud to be able to introduce to you. It's John Lott. Now, John Lott is, he got his PhD in 84 from UCLA. He's done all kinds of writing and so on. He's like dozens and dozens of articles all over, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Los Angeles Times, USA Today, Chicago Tribune. I mean, he's been held positions of law and economics at Yale and Stanford and UCLA, Texas A&M, Rice. I mean, he's been had a position over at the American Enterprise Institute. I mean, the boy has some skills. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about Obama's State of the Union speech from someone that may have a beat on what's really going on. Now, you probably remember in the late 90s, 97, I think it was, that more guns, less crime was, it shocked the political world. And just, hey, you know, let's just look at some numbers. You have more guns, you have the more liberalized you are in concealed carry, the more you have the good guys get to carry, guess what happens? Through deterrence or demise, the bad guys go away. That's just how it is. And we could spend some time on that, but I really want to focus on Obama's State of the Union speech. I got you there, John.
Yeah, good to talk to you. Thanks for having me on.
You know, John, I tell you what my real concern is that we have presidents give State of the Unions over and over and over, and it's what comes out of it is government needs to do more instead of just getting out of the way. And I'll start off with the first thing he was talking about is you think he's saying something that, okay, cool. He's going to go, we're going to stop subsidizing oil and then invest in whatever the heck it is that he wants to. And I'm just like, stop subsidizing oil and all this other stuff to take care of itself. So what do you think about oil subsidies and so on?
Well, a lot of the changes he's talking about would penalize investment in oil relative to other types of investments. And I guess my attitude is, to the extent that you're going to have taxes, you should treat everybody the same. It shouldn't be the government's decision to try to make certain types of investments more or less attractive than others. But that's pretty much been the president's modus operandi. You look at things like the so-called small businesses jobs bill that he passed last year. I mean, it was a lobbyist dream. You had over 2,000 pages of fine print detail about where you could invest to go and get a subsidy and where you couldn't invest. So, one bizarre thing they had in there is that if you're a farmer, if you invest in a building structure above a certain size that's used for two or more operations on the farm, you don't get any tax credit for it. But if it's only used for one operation, then you get this really huge tax credit. As far as I can see, it's basically a targeted subsidy only towards large farms. But, everything was like that. If you export certain products, you get a subsidy. If you export others, you don't get a tax credit. And
sounds like social and economic engineering. I give you an example. Part of the speech, he said, you know, the next generation, we are going to make a goal of having 98% of the people have high-speed wireless. I don't know why that's a government thing. But so rural farmers and businesses can sell worldwide. And I'm going, you know, that's what got me involved in politics and everything in the late 80s anyway, is my father manufactured something, and long story. But I tell you this. What they, when they started this S510 thing, they're going to regulate how we do food and so on. I go, don't sit there and lie to me that you're going to make the world available and then you're going to have all these regulations on growing food. So I'm just, it's, but I want to get something deeper. Instead of making this an Obama thing or a Democrat thing, it seems to me that there's no, even talked about replacing No Child Left Behind with Race to the Top. And the difference is what? You still got the U.S. Department of Education. You still got whatever criteria. We're going to tweak it a little bit. We're going to change it. We're going to rename it. And I'm just, I'm looking more for, is there a philosophical understanding that government just needs to get the flipping out of the way?
Right. Well, I mean, I think one of the best features of our system originally was that it allowed competition between the states, that different places could try different ideas on education or something else, and if they made a mistake, they pay for it. People would leave their state, move someplace else. If they did a good job, they would attract businesses and people, and they'd grow and prosper, and others would copy them. What's happened, though, over the last 50 years across all sorts of administrations has been that the federal government wants one size fits all. It's getting, not allowing the experimentation. If you want to do anything different than what the approved plan is, you have to go and get a waiver, and most of the time that's very difficult to go and get from the federal government. But I think we've lost a lot. We've lost a lot of the ability to go and see what works and what doesn't. And part of that has been, you know, unions and others have pushed for a lot of these things.
Well, the unions are now asking and getting waivers on the health care bill. You know,
right, yeah, well, I mean, you have some place like SEIU, the big public employees union, which is out there and saying, look, we've fought for this health care bill, but we just don't want it to apply to ourselves. And You look at something else today. We just found out that General Electric, which has been, a lot of people are working very closely with the Obama administration, they've been one company that's been waived from some of the new carbon dioxide regulations that are going to be imposed on everybody else. And so that's one big problem. When you have the government has so much power, you know, it can reward its friends and punish its enemies just by determining who they give waivers to and who they don't.
Well, are you in a position to be able to argue for, you know, the elimination of all of these subsidies, all this involvement, all of this one-size-fits-all homogenous from the top-down government thing anyway? I mean, you know, from a lot of the publications that you are popular with and you know, be appearing on a lot of the cable news and so on, I would imagine that, you know, there's a limit. There's a red line. You're not able to cross this line. We need government to do what we want them to do. And do you feel you're coming up against that?
Well, I mean, it's basically up to the courts. I mean, we had courts in the United States up until the late 1930s, which said, look, there's certain things that the federal government can't do. That's the reason why we have the Constitution. It was there to limit the federal government. The Commerce Clause was a prime example. The original point of the Commerce Clause was to go and say the federal government would eliminate trade barriers between the states because some states would want to protect their producers versus others. Now it's been twisted into something where they claim that everything you do affects interstate trade. So the original Wicker case involves some farmer in Kansas who didn't want to deal with the Department of Agriculture regulations on what he could grow or how much, but the government said you have to obey this even if everything you grow is just for your own consumption.
Because they can. You know, we'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, my very, very, very special guest, John Locke. We're going to be talking more about Obama's speech and what he had to say and what does it mean and where we are now, where we're going to be. Because it's coming. It's coming. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Turn on the tube, what do I see? A whole lot of people dying, don't blame me. They point the crooked little fingers at everybody else. Spend all the time feeling sorry for themselves. Victim of this, victim of that. Your mama's too thin and your daddy too fat. Get over it.
Yeah, get over it here on Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, my very special guest, John Lott. Now, John Lott's an economist and an attorney, and the boy's got skills and a lot of opinion in his book in the late 90s, More Guns, Less Crime. And, of course, I want to talk to him about his interest in what Obama is going to do, not what he's saying or what he doesn't say, because I had last Friday, we had Brad Freeman on. He's an Obama supporter, and he wanted to give us what for. And I'm just waiting for them to do the gun control thing. Because they've always said in the past, they go, no, you bunch of crazy libertarians. You know, Obama's not going to take your guns. He hasn't done anything to take guns. He's not taking guns. Why are you? Because they don't want the gun rights activists to get involved in this thing. Because, ooh, man, is that a block of contention. Now, what happens is when you start, you know, even Gabby Giffords here, the congresswoman in Tucson that was shot, that you would think would bring a bunch of gun control legislation. Well, you got, you know, some state legislators might introduce whatever, but it's a non-starter here in Arizona. That is not going to happen. And a lot of it is from the understanding of what John Law had to say about the having more guns is less crime. And so now I want to ask John, you know, behind the scenes, there's an effort. The Obama administration is using something to try and, you know, get some kind of control on this, are they not?
Right. Well, they've done quite a few things kind of under the radar. People, the news media isn't covering it, but they've banned several types of semi-automatic rifles from being imported in the United States because they claim that semi-automatic rifles pose a danger to people, that they can be accidentally shoot somebody. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms last week just put out regulations on what sporting use means for shotguns. And it's a set of regulations which are more stringent than what existed under the assault weapons ban. You have other reporting requirements that are being imposed on gun stores that are going to be quite costly in terms of the number of forms and other things that they have to fill out. You've had a number of people they put on the courts just because we've had two decisions with regard to Heller for the Washington, D.C. ban and Chicago in the McDonald case. All the court decided in those two cases was that a complete ban on an entire category of guns goes too far. But just because you can get five votes for that in a very narrowly divided 5-4 court doesn't mean that you're going to be able to get five votes when it comes to the hundreds of dollars it takes to go and register a gun in Washington, D.C. or Chicago. That fifth vote could flip, or if one of the five justices die or retire, things would change dramatically because the two people that the president's put on the Supreme Court so far have both argued that they do not believe that there's an individual right to people to own guns. Elena Kagan, when she worked in the Clinton administration, was the point person for all of Bill Clinton's gun control regulations. But the people they're putting on the lower courts, which are going to deal with the vast majority of cases on gun issues, very few cases are going to make it to the Supreme Court. The people he's putting on are just as bad. I mean, I knew Obama when we were at the University of Chicago. I taught there when he was a visiting lecturer. And the first time I met him, I went up, introduced myself. He said, "Oh, you're the gun guy." And I said, "Yeah, I guess so." And he said, "I don't believe people should be able to own guns." And I said, "Well, maybe we get together for lunch sometime and talk about it." And he did something which he normally did in our conversations, which he just kind of wrinkled his face, turned around and walked away, and that was the end of our conversation.
Okay, why? Why are they so against the individual ownership? They understand what it means, or they understand what it means? I mean, what is it?
I think it's multiple things. I think they've really convinced themselves that they're going to make the world safer by banning guns, because a lot of people get all their news about guns from the television radio. I mean, probably without thinking hard, you can think of what seems like hundreds or thousands of news stories about bad things that happen with guns. When was the last time, though, that you watched the national news and heard a story about somebody using their gun to save their lives or the life of somebody else? I mean,
okay, let me walk you through, what's going on here in Arizona. Okay. We have right here, even Donald Trump is warning that an economic collapse is coming. I mean, he's going on saying you're going to pay $25 a loaf of bread. Pretty soon we're going to end up being another Egypt, okay? Now we look at Egypt and we see here we have millions of people going, I don't want this government. I'm done. They're peacefully, walking around, doing kind of gathering. And all of a sudden, here comes the armed other guys, throwing Molotov cocktails. They're funded by the government. They're repressing the will of the people because we can't. So now you have, you come to America and we have the municipal bonds, the municipal funds are going to be, nailed. I mean, Meredith Whitney just came out with her report that's starting to disseminate, throughout our culture going, all of these local municipalities are underfunded and all these police officers and teachers and firemen, guess what? Your pension, your retirement, gone, done. So what do? They're going to have to raise taxes. They're going to have to come after us. And we're going to go, how about not? Well, I've already been in contact with our liaisons that we deal with, doing a lot of different protests and things that we do here with Freedom's Phoenix, the Phoenix Police Department. And I go, we need to have a rules of engagement here. When people, it's going to be relatively soon, they're going to be people, heck no, I don't want no more taxes kind of thing. And we need to understand what happens when we're armed. Because when we do our TSA stuff at the Sky Harbor Airport, we're wearing our firearms. We're the ones that had our, black men with AR-15 when Obama comes. So I'm going,
right.
They are going to be armed. People keeps it more peaceful. The police are nicer. They understand. But at some point, there is going to be an Egyptian-style uprising of the people, and we're not going to just be standing there while the goons start killing us. So I'm going, this is what I think they're afraid of. This is what they are worried about. This is what they do not want to have happen.
You look at surveys and the gun issue divides self-identified liberals and conservatives more than abortion, more than taxes. I mean, it's something that kind of gets to the core, I guess, of what it means to be a conservative or a liberal or a libertarian and a liberal. And it's whether or not who's ultimately responsible for your defense. I mean, my research finds that police are the single most important factor for reducing crime, but I think the police understand themselves that they virtually always arrive on the crime scene after the crime's been committed. And what does that mean people should do when they have to confront them by themselves? And telling them to behave passively isn't very good advice.
Police, draw the chalk line and notify the next of kin. You just want to make sure the next of kin is the bad guys. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with John Lott. Just a little bit.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. Here each and every day on LRN.FM radio across the country, here at UP Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. My special guest, John Lott, attorney and economist and a commentator for Fox News and many other publications. You'll see his stuff. Now, I want to talk about Egypt a little bit. We have tomorrow is going to be Friday. That's when they'll have a lot of the protest. And Mubarak, they're negotiating a something. He's going to go. But I tell you what's going on. In my opinion, and I want to get John's take on this. As you watch Fox and CNN and MSNBC and whoever else. What happens is all of a sudden we got to have the official line. We get Tony Blair up there. You have Hillary Clinton, weighing in. You got all these guys, and what do they say? We can't have Egypt just create their own government. It's got to be something that we can accept. It's got to be directed. It's got to be controlled. It's got to be something that we can deal with. And Hillary really made it clear when she goes, you know, we cannot have a void, by which they mean somebody that's not working with them. So I want to get your view on this, on Egypt, and as goes Egypt, as will go a lot of the Middle East. What's the big concern there, that we're not going to be in control of them?
Well, it's a little bit outside my purview, I think my own belief is that when they get involved with these things, it comes back to bite them in the end, because you end up hoisting some ruler on them that they aren't too thrilled about, and it earns their enmity that they blame the United States then for things that go wrong. And we can't go and run everything. We're not going to go and have troops, I assume, in some place like Egypt. Nobody's even thinking about something like that. So our ability to go and control things is somewhat limited. I don't know, when they say somebody acceptable to us, how they would make that come true.
CIA.
Yeah, well, I suppose they can do some things, but... my personal belief is people are going to be a lot happier with us if we let them make their own decisions. And we may disagree with some stuff that they're going to do, but in the long run, if we make them do something they don't like and it comes out, we've done something nefarious to try to get that done, I would imagine you're going to get a lot of people that are going to hate the country for a long time afterwards.
Well, let me ask you, just a philosophical question. Should we be occupying, having the empire so stretched out? I mean, are you, taking on the Ron Paul advocacy of, just bring them all home? Or do you think there's a legitimate reason why we need bases everywhere? Well, what's your take on this?
Well, I mean, I think it would have to have some direct benefit to the United States. I think a lot of the bases that we have are... kind of hard to see what the direct benefit to the United States is. I don't see why we're in Japan or other countries like that.
Well, pick one where you think we should be.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess I could believe that at least the initial invasion of Afghanistan and some other things like that there could be justified, but it's pretty hard to go and see why we have troops around the world that we do. I don't know. Tajikistan or Georgia or even Western Europe. I mean, Western Europe is perfectly able to go and provide its own defense.
Because right, we want to go get Iran. They want to get Iran. Iran needs to be got. I mean, that's what this whole thing's been around. You know, when we had in Obama's address, I made a note. He said towards the end of the speech, by July, we're going to start bringing the troops home from Afghanistan. Do you believe that?
I mean, they may bring a few home. I don't think they're going to be bringing home a substantial number. Look, if you're going to have them there, I'm not so sure that it makes sense to go and tell everybody when you're going to pull them out. I think Obama wants to have it both ways on lots of those things. He wants to go and promise that they'll be there until the job's done, and yet he wants to satisfy a certain part of his base that doesn't want them there to begin with.
And what's the job?
I think in the end he makes nobody happy by doing that. You know, some short term, he may be able to convince people that he's on everybody's side. But I think the long term, my guess is we'll just leave a mess.
Well, I mean, what is the job? I mean, the job done in Afghanistan. Does anybody even know what the job is?
Well, I assume what they would say is to leave a stable government. But,
why is that our concern? I have to ask this. John, I'll tell you. You know, a lot of times, especially it involves Israel, Middle East, Korea, everything. I have to, raise my hand and say, I got a question. Am I allowed not to freaking care? Am I allowed to just advocate keeping my money? And I did the math when after we had first started. I first started doing radio in 03. And I remember I had Tony Snow on, and he had just started this Fox News Sunday thing. But, you know, this is before he became press secretary and so on. And he was assistant deputy communications guy under Daddy Bush. And I'm going, well, of course you're going to have an opinion on this. Heck, you were cheerleading for this thing before. Well, he didn't want that brought up, you know, and I'm going, you know, this is, it's so, I just need to ask the question. Why?
No, it's a good question. Look, I don't, there's one thing to go after a group that was involved in attacking us. It's another thing to stay around and try to put a government together. I think that the claim was, anyway, that if we left, then the people, the Taliban, would be back in power and they'd go and attack again. So there's something to be said for that. It's not really obvious that we're putting together a government, though, that's going to be staying in the long term. And so the issue is, if you don't think you're going to be successful with that, then how much money are you going to be willing to put into it?
Whatever they can get away with, John. I'm telling you, it's the left and the right. It's Fox and MSNBC. I mean, it's everybody. The one thing they do not do. Heck, we even had, what's-her-face, the liberal MSNBC. I can't remember her name off the top of my head.
Rachel Maddow?
Yeah, Maddow. She was in support of Mubarak. You know, at first, you know, I'm going, come on. And Obama, Mr. Anti-War guy, he gets elected on anti-war. They don't even address the empire. We are going to spend ourselves into oblivion. There's no fixing it. It's done. Yeah. It's already happened. You know, let me ask you about
what's happened is Obama has pretty much done what George Bush would have done in both Iraq and Afghanistan.
Exactly.
And the reason why he did that in part, I think, is that he wants to concentrate on transforming the American economy. And so
Stop spending money outside of the country. I mean, is that even, you know, brought up? It's not. Why?
I'm not sure I can answer the question. I mean, I suppose he's going to propose, we'll see the budget when it comes out, some cuts in national defense type things.
No, it's just, you know, frosting, man. I'm just so, wow. I mean, you know, wow. It's not even brought up to discuss. They don't even want to talk about, you know, the amount of money that's involved with this empire. And, we did a numbers. This may be of interest to you. I did a calculation, and that's what I was leading up to with this Tony Snow thing. He was talking about our standard of living, and we got to have, you know, access to oil and all that kind of stuff and cheap oil. And I did the calculation. It was like $130-something a barrel over the cost of oil for us to go get cheap oil. If you take in all the military spend in the war and all this other stuff that we have on top of so we can have access to this cheap oil. And I'm going, it's not that cheap.
Right. Well, look, if we let the government get out of trying to regulate, micromanage the energy business, I think we wouldn't have a lot of these debates and discussions that we're having right now. But, if they make it so that we can't produce energy here in the United States, I think it makes us more vulnerable.
Yeah, they do, and I'm sure they have a reason why. You know, when we come back, I want to ask the economist part of John Lott's resume about municipal bonds and the debts on the local communities and how that may play into the ruckus that's coming to America. We'll be right back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Stop me now. I'm having such a good time. I'm having a ball.
Don't stop me now, man. We're on the road, my good friend now. Oh, I John Lott, man, I've always wanted to talk to him. This is a really big treat for me because, you know, we've used his book a lot. We have a website, secondamendmentisforeveryone.com, orgnet, whatever. Second Amendment is for everyone. And we started that in the mid-90s. And when the book came out, we go, oh, he's our new best friend. You know, thank you very much. Now, I want to get to the economist side of John Lott's expertise here because I'll preface it this way. A couple days ago, we had my good friend, I used to be producer for, Charles Goyette. Now, he's an author, New York Times bestselling, translated into Chinese, Korean, and Indonesian, whatever the heck language that is, of The Dollar Meltdown. And as we were having our conversation, he made up this point, and I want to bring this up because this is what Obama had to say in his address. He said, I'm proposing domestic spending freeze over 5 years to reduce the deficit by $400 billion over the next decade. Not the debt, the deficit over the next decade, $400 billion. And what that brought to mind was Charles said, he goes, you know, when the Republicans came out and they said, you know, we're going to cut the deficit by $100 billion. And he goes, yeah, okay, well, let's go ahead and see how long it takes before our debt goes up another $100 billion. Less than a week. A week. It went up $100 billion. Means nothing. And Obama wants to do this over a decade, $400 billion a week. And I'm going, with the municipal bonds coming, you know, they're getting evaluated, you know, this month. And it's going to be, they're going to want more taxes to fully fund their pension funds and all this other stuff. It's over. It is so over. John, tell me how it's not going to be over.
Well, just on the first thing about the spending, I mean, we've just had a huge, like, the discretionary spending's increased like 82% in just the last couple of years. And so to have a freeze now for 5 years after that increase, I mean, it's still going to be way above what it otherwise would have been if Obama hadn't had the big increase. But secondly, he's proposing all sorts of new programs that appear to be exempt from the freeze. And so, and in fact, if you add together all the spending as well as the freeze, he's still going to be increasing spending about $20 billion this next year, higher than it would have been.
Yeah, and how's that Republican-controlled Senate and House going to deal with this? How's that going to work?
Well, the Republicans only control the House. The Democrats still control the Senate. You know, they want to return discretionary spending back to where it was prior to 2008.
What's the numbers in the Senate? What's the split in the Senate?
The Democrats have 43 seats, and the Republicans have 53 to 47 Democrats.
So you can see, even with the House, a majority after the Tea Party, you know, invasion of Washington and all this, you know, is that really going to make a difference? I mean, it is the financial situation of the dollar even repairable? Is it? Do we have any hope whatsoever that we're not going to go in to QE 47 and the dollar's done? Tell me how it's not done.
Right. Well, I mean, obviously, I think there is a risk of some inflation. I don't think it's going to be huge, though. You have to look at the broader measures of money supply, and, you know, maybe you're talking about a 6%, 7% inflation rate, which obviously isn't good. But, the notion has been that they are going to kind of stimulate the economy by increasing the price level. The problem is the only way that works is by making people make mistakes so that firms think that there's greater demand for their products than it really is, that people think that they're getting paid higher wages than they really are because they see the higher wage offer and they don't realize that the prices of the goods and services that they buy are also going to be going up. And so their real wages aren't rising, but you get people to take jobs and to do other things that they only are doing because they're making a mistake, and that makes us poor. And then when people realize that they took the wrong jobs, then they have to go and look again for employment.
The price of corn has gone up 88% over the last year. We have wheat has gone up 114% over the last year. Energy is going to go up. More food's going to go up. It's done. I want you to address.
But you have to look at prices in general. You have to look at all prices. If you have an inflation rate of 2%, if something goes up, 80%, then something else is falling. And we've had drops, obviously, and the price of homes have gone down. You know, we've had home prices are like, what, 24% below what they were 2 years ago?
Which represents the net worth of many Americans. I mean, I say let it go, man. Let it go. I can go pick. You know, my son, just he's 23, married, two kids. He just bought a nice three-bedroom, two-bath, Phoenix, a nice neighborhood with a pool. That was like $65,000. You know, or 85. It was less. And I'm going, I think it was 85. And I go, you know, wow. I mean, and I think that he has a monthly bill of $600 a month as his payment. And I said, you know, that's a great deal. And it's a low interest rate. And maybe that's a good reason to get it now. But I guarantee you're locked into that because that house is going to be worth $20,000 less another year from now. I just want you to know this. And he's like, yeah, Dad, but, you know, it works for me. And I go, okay, fine, just so long. FYI, it's going to keep going down. So I'm just – I need – John, you're an economic PhD, man. I need to know, how is it that the local municipalities are going to fully fund their retirement programs with all of these municipal employees? How is that going to happen?
Well, I'm sure you're right. There's going to be some new taxes. They're going to be doing it. Hopefully, they'll cut back on the benefits and make a lot of these employees have to go and start funding. I mean, it's only in the government do you still get defined benefit as compared to defined contribution. Any company that you're going to be working for is going to have a defined contribution retirement program where you get what you put in. And but you know, a lot of government employees don't even have put in anything, but they're guaranteed or very small percentage of the amount that's going to be going into their funds there. But they're guaranteed certain levels of benefits when they retire, a certain percentage of their income.
Oh no, I'm not a big fan of the benefit package that they're getting. That's done. But it's more than that. It's the people that believe that investing in a municipal bond was a safe haven. You know, it was a place to put your money. Well, it's not. And when that goes, there are going to be a whole another segment of society, of retirees, of investment, money markets, whatever. You know, that's going to go. I'm wondering how it is that you're looking at a year, even a year, 2 years, before the 2012 presidential election cycle. What is going to be the – here we are on record, in the archive – how is the economic situation of the United States of America going to be – a year, 2 years from now?
But these are long-term problems. I'm not sure, you know, they're bad problems, but they're not going to necessarily come to a head for a lot of places right now. I mean, these are obligations that they have 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years from now. And so, you know, some municipalities might go into default now. The states have certain obligations to kind of make people whole in many respects. So that's just going to, and states can't go bankrupt. What they mean is the amount of money that the state governments spend on a lot of their programs, which I believe you would think are wasted anyway, would have to go to fund these liabilities that are there. So, I mean, that's not good, and they'll raise taxes. And that's not good either. But, you know, I don't think it's good, but it's something that's going to be bad over a long period of time as opposed to necessarily coming to some dramatic head in the next year or two.
Yeah, I bet they were saying the same thing about Egypt. And in Tunisia, when a guy finally can't get any help, he just sets himself on fire and it starts a revolution. You want a worldwide government? Well, I give you worldwide revolution. Hey, it's been a pleasure having you on, John. It's been a real treat for me. And, you know, my passion on this, because I just know what's coming. It's going to get bad.
It's important that people care.
I'm sorry?
No, thank you. It's important that you care. It's important that people care. These are real problems.
Oh, yeah, I care. I got 4 kids, 2 grandkids. I care. And plus, I'd like to be free, too, in my lifetime. Thanks to John Lott for coming on. John, L-O-T-T. Google him. He explodes all over your browser. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock from Phoenix, Arizona, here on the LRN.FM radio from the beautiful studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. We'll be right back.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what Readers of Freedom's Phoenix.com get every day. Readers of Freedom's Phoenix.com are constantly provided the information that detail the real news between the lines of propaganda about government policies and the true relationship we all have with coercive governments. Learn the true condition of our economy, innovations and technological breakthroughs in energy, health, computer science, and space travel. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media, the media that is so last century. Corporate media has evolved into nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but we now have a fantastic alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com provides constant news updates on the issues that affect our lives in the most important ways. Our liberty and our property are under constant attack, and FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda while encouraging the participation of our readers. Join us at FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com, where the revolution between the ears has already matured.